From WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. It was just last month that Bald Head Island completed the installation of the first terminal groin in North Carolina since the state lifted the ban on hardened structures several years ago. Three other beach communities are seeking permits for their own structures, Figure Eight Island in New Hanover County, and Holden and Ocean Isle beaches, both in Brunswick County, want a terminal groin to trap sand, slow erosion, and lessen the frequency of expensive beach nourishment projects. Some environmental advocates argue Bald Head Island is an outlier because it's adjacent to an active shipping channel. It battles accelerated erosion from non-natural causes. According to regulatory officials, Figure Eight Island is within months of a permit decision from the Army Corps of Engineers. Today, we'll explore the questions around the proposal and what is at stake on both sides of the debate. David Kellum, who grew up in the area and has known Rich Inlet since childhood, is also the administrator of the Figure Eight Island Homeowners Association. That's the organization seeking the permit for a terminal groin. David Kellum, welcome to Coastline.
Glad to be here.
Jeff Gisler is an attorney with the Southern Environmental Law Center and is representing the North Carolina Coastal Federation and Audubon North Carolina. Environmental advocacy groups both opposed to the project. Jeff Gisler, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
And we're inviting you to join the conversation. You can ask a question about the project or make a comment by calling us at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org and find us on Twitter at @CoastlineHQR. David Kellum, tell us first why the Figure Eight Island Homeowners Association is pursuing a permit for a terminal groin. What's at stake for you?
Obviously, we want to maintain our island, the shoulders of Rich Inlet. We did so not building a terminal groin, but relocating Mason's Inlet in conjunction with the county and the north end of Wrightsville in 2001. And during the 2000 timeframe, 2001 to 2008, we had approximately 18 homes that were imminently threatened and falling in the water, and had to build a 2,200-foot seawall of sandbags to protect them. And at that point in time, no one could walk the beach. Turtles could not nest. There was no area for birds. And so we began a long-term management plan to protect the north end of Figure Eight Island and Rich's Inlet. And as part of that, a terminal groin became one of the options for consideration in that long-term management plan.
And are those sandbags still there at this point?
Most of them are still there. Many of them are covered. Some of them covered and vegetated. But yes, they are still there in most areas.
And Jeff Gisler, you as an attorney for the Southern Environmental Law Center are opposing this project. Why is that? What do you think is going to happen if a terminal groin is built?
Well, I think the first thing we need to cover is what makes Rich Inlet so important. And when you look up and down the Atlantic coast and on the coast of North Carolina, Rich Inlet really stands out as one of the very few places where the inlet has not been dredged, has not been hardened. It really still exists in its natural condition. And that's a rarity. We'll refer to the Endangered Species Act, but that Rich Inlet as a natural inlet is an endangered species. And so what's at stake here is the loss of the recreational beach that's currently there at the north end of Figure Eight and the habitat that exists there. Because what happens with terminal groins, and you see it up and down the coast, Audubon did a survey of the entire Atlantic coast, and for every place where there was a terminal groin, there was no sand on the inlet side of the groin. So what we know from experience and what we know from what the Homeowners Association consultants put in the EIS is that if they build this terminal groin, that sandy spit that currently exists, that is a great recreational resource and is a great and provides great habitat for threatened and endangered birds as well as sea turtles, we know that will be lost. So that's what's at stake from our perspective. And so our organizations are looking to protect rich inlet in its natural state because it provides all of those valuable functions and because it is a true rarity.
And what's interesting to me about the projection into the future is in the EIS, and there are different forms of that, and maybe I should ask one of you at one point to kind of explain what the progression is, because we started with the DEIS, the draft environmental impact statement. Now we have an SEIS, a supplemental environmental impact statement, and there is going to, will there be a final, an FEIS, final environmental impact statement? Is that in the works now?
That's ultimately the end result, yes.
Okay. And one of the methods that the Figure Eight Island Homeowners Association has used to predict what's going to happen is Delft 3D modeling. Can you talk? And you've used other forms of modeling, too. Can you talk a little bit about that, David Kellum?
Well, the engineering firm that is directed by the Corps of Engineers to the Corps of Engineers actually administers the environmental impact study. And it is a comprehensive study taking everything into consideration, economics, environmental, engineering, and the engineering firm, Coastal Planning and Engineering, have worked on this for many years, doing modeling and engineering for, as well as environmental assessments for every aspect of it. They're directed by the Corps of Engineers to ensure that things are done properly. The Corps worked very hard to be sure that the document is correct and accurate. It's not something directed by the Figure Eight Homeowners Association. It is a product of the Corps of Engineers.
And so when we're talking about what the modeling shows, does the modeling show that that will in fact be the case, that on the inlet side of this structure there would be no sand?
The modeling does not show that. The modeling does actually... The inlet will migrate south. It has probably 4 to 5 times in the last 100 years migrated down to the point of where it would be threatening to homes. And then it migrates back to the north. And it's been about a 15-year cycle is what history has shown for the inlet. And so if the models do show that the inlet will come south, and that it will come to the area where the terminal groin is, but not as a result of the terminal groin. It will come that way anyway. And then, regardless of terminal groin or not, it will go back north, very likely shift back to the north.
I spoke earlier this week with Dr. Rob Young, who is director of the Program for the Study of Developed Shorelines at Western Carolina University. And this is his particular area of expertise. He is asked, and you're smiling, David Kellum, so I'll ask you to tell me why you're smiling in a moment, but let's hear from him. When he talks about modeling, he says he's dubious about the value that it adds, and he explains why, even with good physics, which is part of the Delft 3D modeling program, he considers that the most rigorous and the most academic. He says it still faces an insurmountable problem.
If you want to look at long-term impacts, you have to be able to predict the weather. The other problem with all of these models, right, is that they are, you know, what scientists would call deterministic. They're not stochastic or statistical. So that means, what deterministic means is that the model gives you an answer. It doesn't give you a probability of this happening, right? It gives you an answer. And there's no way that that answer is the one right answer. But the problem is that the models are incapable of giving us a range of answers, so we don't know how right or wrong that answer is.
And by the same token, the Southern Environmental Law Center, Jeff Gisler, and SaveRichInlet.org, which is a website that says this is what will happen if this terminal groin is built, you have a before and after picture. So how can you, I mean, if this coastal scientist is basically saying nobody can tell us what's going to happen when we build a terminal groin, we can take guesses, but there's just no scientific way to predict that, then how can the opponents say that there will be no sand on the other side of the, and that sand spit will go away?
Well, there are several things you can look at. You can look at places where there have been terminal groins, and that's what you see. There's no sand. And with respect to the modeling, you know, we can look at the modeling. And Mr. Kellum is simply not correct. And I can give you the images that were produced by the model. They show that the inlet, they modeled under two conditions, one with a 2006 shoreline, one with a 2012 shoreline. And if you look at year zero to year seven, in 2006, the spit's completely gone. If you look at 2012, from year zero to year seven, the spit shrinks. Now, importantly, in that 2012 modeling, if they do absolutely nothing, there's more sand and more beach than if they build the terminal groin. But what's important to understand about this modeling is that even in the EIS, so the way this came out is they started this process in 2006 looking at realigning the channel. They decided that they wanted a terminal groin, lobbied the legislature to change the law. The law changed. In 2012, they put out the draft EIS. One of our primary comments was, well, you're using 2006 shoreline data, but in the last 6 years, the erosion that was occurring in 2006 that no one disputes occurred then had completely reversed because the inlet had returned to what has historically been its more normal position. And the beach had grown by almost a mile. And what we said was the model, which predicts severe erosion that would jeopardize homes, they said 32 in 10 years, is wrong. And in the SEIS, what the actual document says, or what the engineering report, so the report that backs up all the documents and is appendix to the document, says it is important to note that alternative 2 does not approximate what occurred between 2006 and 2012. So even the engineering firm that prepared the model is saying the model is wrong.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. And when we come back from this break, we're going to hear from David Kellum about this because I think he's got a few things to say. And we're talking about the proposed terminal groin at the north end of Figure Eight Island, why some environmentalists say it would sound the death knell for an important recreational and biodiverse area, and why supporters say this is going to save millions of dollars worth of real estate. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 910-343-1138. This is Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn, and here today to help us explore the proposed terminal groin project on Figure Eight Island is Jeff Gisler, an attorney with the Southern Environmental Law Center, opposed to the project, and David Kellum, administrator of the Figure Eight Island Homeowners Association, seeking a permit for this project. If you have a question or a comment about this terminal groin project, give us a call at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. We do have an email that I want to get to in a moment, but just before we went to break, David Kellum, Jeff Gisler, was talking about his contention that even within the modeling that done by the Delft 3D system, that it shows that sand spit will eventually disappear. Do I have that right, Jeff Gisler? Is that what?
That's right. And it's plainly laid out in the engineering report. And you can compare the year zero and year seven, and the sand disappears.
So, David Kellum, what do you understand from other experts that you've spoken with?
When we were doing the modeling, we used 2006 because that was the worst-case scenario, and we wanted to utilize the worst-case scenario modeling for it. If you look at the terminal groin at Fort Macon, it does have sand on above and beyond the terminal groin closer to the inlet, also Pea Island. So do many others along the East Coast. We've utilized Dr. Robert Dean, who's now deceased, very knowledgeable on terminal groins from University of Florida. He was involved early on in our engineering assessment of this. And we must keep in mind that we're not dealing with natural processes as much. The Atlantic Intercoastal Waterway, as much as I fully support the Atlantic Intercoastal Waterway, totally altered every environmental process that exists on the southeastern North Carolina coastline. And when the Corps of Engineers dredged it in 1938 to 1942, it altered our Mother Nature, we'll say. And water can now go in Rich's Inlet or any other inlet and go out another inlet. So it's important to realize that we must now manage our resources and protect our coast from one end. If you look in New Hanover County, every inlet, Carolina Beach Inlet, was man-made. Corn Cake Inlet's closed, which is down below Fort Fisher. We have the rocks at the southern end that have been an item of discussion. Mason Borough has been hardened with a massive jetty on both sides. Mason's Inlet has been relocated. Everything has had to be managed. Snow's cut altered the Cape Fear River and water salinity content. So everything, you know, needs management now. Dr. Bill Cleary, who's one of the most renowned inlet experts and without a doubt the most renowned expert on Rich's Inlet, he has worked in and around Rich's Inlet throughout his career. He's assessed it very carefully and monitored it, and we can go back and determine where the inlet was for the last 100 years and when it was threatening to homes that are on Figure Eight now. Figure Eight was only built, like many other beach towns, in the 60s and 70s. So things prior to that and are not a factor. So,
Jeff Gisler.
So I think Mr. Kellum just laid out the reason why Richard Inlet is so important, because a lot of these other inlets have been altered and they have been hardened and they have been changed. And what you see is the birds aren't there. Audubon has done extensive sampling on and observations on Figure Eight Island and looking at the birds that use Rich Inlet compared to the birds that use the other end of the island that has been altered. And there's no comparison. The end of the island at Rich Inlet is dramatically more valuable as habitat. There's just no comparison. And talking about Dr. Cleary, it's important to look at what Dr. Cleary has done, because he has looked back to 1938, and he wrote his findings in a report that is an appendix to the EIS. And what that report says, it was in 2007, so since then we've had 10 years of accretion on Figure 8. What he said in that report was, although the ocean front along the northern portion of Figure 8 Island has experienced several periods of erosion since 1938, net progradation has characterized the past 7 decades of ocean shoreline change. So what even Dr. Cleary is saying is that over the last 80 years, what we're seeing now, where the shoreline is growing, that's the norm. There have been three periods of significant erosion. One starting in 1938 that went for about 7 years, one in 1980 that went for almost 4 years, and the period that started in the early 2000s that went for 5 or 6 years. And so the question here is whether that 4 or 5 years, 5 or 6 years of severe erosion is reason to upset the norm at Figure Eight Island, which is accretion. What we're seeing now, according to Dr. Cleary's own analysis, is substantially more normal than what we saw in the mid-2000s.
And for people who aren't super versed in the lingo, accretion means that the beach is growing.
The beach is growing. More sand is coming on.
It's the opposite of erosion.
Right. The history of the inlet is that sand from Lee Hutaf Island is washing away and ending up at Rich Inlet, ending up on Figure Eight Island.
I want to get to this email. Alex writes, how can the expense and environmental impacts to public trust resources be justified for infrastructure that is totally private and not needed? Thanks. David Kellum, I'll let you respond to that.
Well, first off, this structure will be built on private property. It will be funded for in its entirety by the homeowners at Figure Eight. Figure Eight has been good stewards of our resources. Rich Inlet has been dredged all the way up Nixon's Channel to right behind Rich Inlet itself. Figure Eight has done that numerous times. Figure Eight has spent in excess of $10 million dredging and maintaining the channels for the past 15 or so years. Figure Eight has dredged Nixon's Channel. Figure Eight has been involved in maintaining Mason's Inlet. Figure Eight has maintained the Atlantic Intercoastal Waterway as a requirement of the Mason's Inlet for the Corps of Engineers. We have been responsible stewards. The reason why it is so good is because we have done good management. UNCW, Dr. Webster, has done bird monitoring long before bird monitoring was a cool thing to do and on Figure Eight. Figure Eight has done turtle monitoring. Every endangered species has been monitored and maintained. we're the ones that have put up the bird nesting areas and given the opportunity for the birds to come. Figure Eight has been very responsible stewards of the natural resources while providing home locations out there.
Can you paint a picture for us, David Kellum, of what is threatened right now? Are there structures that are threatened right now, or are you just saying we've seen this cycle? It happens every 15 years or so. We know it's going to come again, and then these particular homes will be threatened. What are they? How many are there?
Well, there were originally 15 that were imminently threatened, and imminently threatened by definition means that the ocean is within 20 feet of the heated structures of the homes. That's the point they were sandbagged. And we dredged Rich Inlet, the backside of it, Nixon's Channel, and put sand out on the beach to protect that. We did that two or three times. And at the present time, there's one house on the backside that's sandbagged, and water touches it on a regular basis. We know that the inlet will return to its southernmost location, and homes will be threatened again. And that's what this structure would actually prevent, the inlet from moving all the way to the point that it got to the homes. It would stop at the structure instead of going to the point that it actually undermines homes and no one could have any area. Once the structure is completed, then people will be able to walk over it, walk behind it, walk through it. In most areas, they will not even know it's there.
You're listening to Coastline. Today, we're talking about the proposed terminal groin at the north end of Figure Eight Island in New Hanover County. And here to help us explore what's at stake on both sides is David Kellum, whom you just heard from, administrator of the Figure Eight Island Homeowners Association, the organization seeking a permit for a terminal groin, and Jeff Gisler, an attorney with the Southern Environmental Law Center, representing both the North Carolina Coastal Federation and Audubon North Carolina, both opposed to the project. Jeff Gisler, when we're talking about people's homes being threatened, how is this something that environmental groups can oppose?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, we're not talking about them being threatened very much. The history of the inlet is not one that would threaten these houses. We had 5 years of severe erosion that the EIS uses. So let me just go back to the EIS and look at it. Because if you look at how they try to justify it, and that was the emailer's question, it's like, how can it be justified? It can't be justified. And you see that in the EIS, because when you look at the way they analyze alternatives, the way they evaluate the cost of doing nothing, they take those 4 or 5 years in the mid-2000s, and they assume that that worst erosion that has ever occurred at Figure Eight continues for 30 years uninterrupted. That's never happened. It's never come close to happening. It's not what even Bill Cleary says that it is the nature of this inlet. And by doing that, they can jack up how much it would cost because they can predict catastrophe on that end of the island. And so when you get to the real impacts and the real inlet, you're only talking about a short period of time, maybe every few decades, in which the inlet may shift back. That can be managed in a much different and much less damaging way than building a terminal groin that will forever change that end of the island.
How would your clients propose to manage it?
The way that the Figure Eight Island started to manage it, what they did is in that report that Dr. Cleary prepared in 2007, that was when they were looking at inlet realignment. And that's what he said, you know, this will work. If we realign the inlet so that it matches where it is actually right now, that would be ideal, and that Figure Eight Island would grow considerably. And so inlet realignment, it's not our preferred outcome. We would prefer the inlet
remain natural. It's still an engineered outcome.
But it's still engineered, but it's substantial. I mean, there's no comparison between a realigned channel and a terminal groin. And that could be done in a way that recognizes that it's not going to be, that the inlet is not always trying to shift to that worst case scenario. That worst case scenario has only happened for 5 of the last 80 years. That's not a rational basis for projecting what will happen in the future.
David Kellum, is inlet realignment something that Figure Eight Island has looked at, and Is that a viable option?
Absolutely, we looked at it. That's the environmental impact study requires that every option be looked at. Inlet relocation or realignment, as Jeff describes it, would involve literally moving millions of cubic yards of sand to put it back into the proper position. It is much more environmentally unfriendly to move millions of cubic yards of sand, not to mention the cost factor of it. And the cost were going to be in excess of $18 million to even begin to. And there's no guarantee it would work. To move something is not going to say it's going to stay there. The long-term maintenance of moving it back time and time again. And so we chose the least environmentally impact option, which is a small amount of dredging that would occur in conjunction with the terminal groin.
What would the cost of the terminal groin be? Because when you're looking at the cost of this entire project, you're talking about costs for the life of the terminal groin, maintenance and occasional beach renourishment. And then if people ever decide to remove the terminal groin, there's a significant cost there. What kind of, and I realize this is a ballpark thing at this point, but what kind of cost are we talking about?
The engineering estimates to actually build the terminal groin itself are between $2 and $4 million. The maintenance on it is almost minuscule. It is a steel, 1,000 feet of it is a steel sheet pile wall driven into the ground. There is no maintenance you can do to steel. It has greater than a 50-year life expectancy to the steel sheet pile wall. So there's no maintenance that you can do. It's going to be buried in the ground. It's going to be below grade, so people will not even know it's there. They can walk over it. The dunes will build on top of it as they are now. And the last 500 feet of it would be a very low rock structure, not at all like what you would see at Masonboro Jetty, that people could walk over, walk through. Would be about 2 feet in elevation of rock that would be visible on top of the beach. And if we built it today, it would not even touch the water. It would be built totally on dry land. It will have no impact.
And so you're looking at this as a pretty low-cost, long-term alternative. I mean, $2 to $4 million sounds like a very small amount of money compared to the cost of beach renourishment and ongoing costs that other beach communities in this region have to deal with.
That's correct. We will continue to do beach renourishment. Beach renourishment is a required component of this.
That will be part of it.
But it will be much less. The volume and amount that we have to move will be much less than if the terminal groin were not built.
Jeff Gisler.
So just a couple of comments on issues that Mr. Kellum raised. One is the environmental impact. There's no argument that building this terminal groin is more protective than realigning the inlet. It's just there's no legitimate argument that has less environmental impact. Dredging, because as he acknowledged, they'll continue to dredge to provide beach nourishment. The second thing is that the EIS projects that the terminal groin will be $4.5 million, and it'll be $24 million over the life over the 30-year period in which they looked at economic costs. And what's important to understand is going back to that modeling, that the engineers, and this goes back to an earlier point, they are the EIS is being prepared under the direction of the Corps, but the folks who are preparing it were hired by Figure Eight Island and directed by Figure Eight Island leading up to that process. They're still paid by Figure Eight Island during the EIS process. And if the groin is built and it has to be built and monitored, those folks are going to be paid by Figure Eight to build and monitor it. So those engineers predicted in their modeling that if Figure Eight Isle, if the island does nothing, if the Homeowners Association does nothing over the next 7 years, because that's as far as they modeled, there will be more beach than if they build the terminal groin. So the cost comparison is $0 to $24 million. So there is not an economic justification based on the information prepared by Figure Eight's own consultants for this terminal groin.
I heard sort of a wild idea, but it was an interesting one. Someone mentioned, why don't the people on Figure Eight Island get together, look at the threatened structures, find a way to make those the owners of those threatened structures whole financially in exchange for them going away. And because there's a whole other community that ostensibly isn't threatened, and over the long term, this person was saying that would cost less than constant beach renourishment, maintenance, installation of a terminal groin. What do you think about that, David Kellum? Is that just wild? And
In my opinion, yes. I believe that Rich Inlet has the potential to continue to migrate south. There is no rule that says it's going to stay where it is. It may be 15 houses this year. It could take off and go and become 30 houses. It could become 40 houses. It could do like Mason's Inlet did and continue a southern migration. So the potential exists for it to continue to be problematic. Again, a long-term management plan to protect the entire north end of the island, to include the bird areas, to include the wildlife, is what our goal is and has always been.
Jeff Gisler.
Well, so this goes back to Dr. Cleary, and he has looked back to 1938. And what the EIS says is Rich Inlet has migrated within a relatively narrow corridor of approximately 500 meters from 1938 to present. So this idea that the inlet is going to suddenly depart from 80 years of observation and just consume the entire island, it's make-believe. And I think the point that you're asking about is an important one, because it's the same thing at Holden Beach, it's the same thing at Ocean Isle. These terminal groins, and under the best case scenario for them, they're going to protect a handful of houses, and the entire community is going to pay for it. And so whether it's here or in the other areas where they're being proposed by municipalities, if you weigh the cost and benefit of them, it's never going to pan out as being a good economic decision.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM, and David Kellum will let you respond when we come back from the break. We're talking about the proposed terminal groin on Figure Eight Island. Supporters say it would preserve millions of dollars worth of real estate. Opponents say it would forever change one of the few unengineered inlets in the state. If you'd like to ask your own question or make a comment, give us a call. One segment left, 910-343-1138, or email coastline@whqr.org. You're listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn, and with us today, David Kellum of the Figure Eight Island Homeowners Association and Jeff Gisler of the Southern Environmental Law Center. They're on opposite sides of the debate over a proposed terminal groin at the north end of Figure Eight Island. If you'd like to ask a question or make a comment, give us a call, 910-343-1138, or email us at coastline@whqr.org. And before we went to break, David Kellum, we were talking about what sounds to me like a handful of homes threatened and an entire beach community is being asked to help pay to protect these homes that were built in this unfortunate spot. Is that an accurate characterization or no?
Well, Figure Eight, it's hard to say whether it's an accurate characterization or not. Beach communities are beach communities. Most of them are close-knit. Figure Eight is certainly an example of that. We all pulled together when we did Mason's Inlet. It brought in Wrightsville Beach to protect Shell Island. Shell Island was the threatened structure then. Figure Eight became part of that, and we pulled together to do that. So I think it's everybody. Ultimately, the decision, once and if we are permitted to build this structure, will be decided by the Homeowners Association out on Figure Eight. It will be the 563 property owners. They will be the ones that will vote and make this determination. And the majority of them will have to vote in favor of it. So it's not just a few house issues. Our infrastructure is at risk. The roads, the water lines, power, and everything else out there has the potential to be at risk. So, you know, again, long-term management is the key to managing our coastline.
Michael, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hi there. I had a question. It sounded to me from the conversation that there are terminal groins somewhere else. And I was just wondering what is unique about figure eight island relative to the other islands where there are terminal coins, that we just can't look at what happened there to decide what's the, you know, whether putting in a terminal coin is good or bad?
That's a great question. Jeff Gisler, Southern Environmental Law Center.
So of the three, the three terminal coins that currently exist in North Carolina are at Pea Island, at the Oregon Inlet, at Fort Macon, and at now the newest one at Bald Head Island. All three are on major navigation channels and are heavily dredged. And so that Rich Inlet is not comparable to those three inlets. It's not the same thing. But we can look at those for some things. And Bald Head Island's too new. We can't tell.
Right.
There
was
some reports
completed last month.
Right,
and we know that there are preliminary reports of sand accreting, and it's working, in other words.
Well,
but it's been a month.
Right. And they're required to put sand there as part of the construction. So it's too early to tell anything on that one. The other two we do have some information on. And what the Division of Coastal Management said in 2008 about Fort Macon groin was that if they didn't constantly renourish the beaches behind it and renourish around it, that it would fail. And at Pea Island, between 1989 and 2005, they put 5 million cubic yards of sand on the beach and another 2 million cubic yards just offshore to try to maintain the beaches there. So we're talking about 7 million cubic yards of sand over 16 years. That's more than 400,000 cubic yards a year. So what we know from the few that do exist in North Carolina, and there is no spit at Pea Island. It doesn't exist. You can see that. At Fort Macon, Fort Macon has a long history of having many groins, many geotextile tubes. Now there's one groin. So it is its own. It's kind of in its own world as far as terminal groins go. So we can't take some of that experience away, and it all suggests that if this groin is built, we're going to lose the spit that people use for recreation and that wildlife uses for nesting.
I want to get to this email. This person writes, has anyone looked at the possibility of constructing a submerged artificial reef on the beachfront? It would be nothing more than some rocks in the water beyond the surf zone. It's been a successful erosion control technique in the Caribbean and would benefit the surf zone by creating fish habitat. The only thing this wouldn't help would be the one house on Nixon's Channel that was strangely built right next to the water to begin with. David Kellum, has this ever been discussed?
We have looked at many different options, whether they be geotextile tubes out there or rock structures. But at this point, the regulatory agencies do not allow for that. So it's not an option for us to consider at this point in time.
All right. And Susan writes, why must there be two sides to the issue rather than establish goals and working together for solutions? Silence in the room.
Well,
Jeff Gisler, go ahead.
I think when you come down to something, there's not a good way to build a terminal groin. And so if there is, it hasn't been discovered yet. And so the effects of the terminal groin are going to be such that the public use of the beach, the wildlife use of the beach, it's not going to be what it is today, and it's going to be significantly degraded. And so we would certainly work with the Homeowners Association on other alternatives that didn't include a terminal groin, and our clients would be happy to discuss in more detail things like inlet management and beach nourishment. But when you get to the level of building a permanent rock structure on a beach that the public has a right under North Carolina law to use, that's where it's hard to find common ground when that's the alternative.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about the proposed terminal groin project on Figure Eight Island, which is likely within months of getting a decision from the Army Corps of Engineers on whether it will be permitted. With us today is David Kellum from the Figure Eight Island Homeowners Association and Jeff Gisler of the Southern Environmental Law Center. If you have a question, give us a call, 910-343-1138. Just a few minutes left in today's show. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. And David from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Thank you, ma'am. I'm hearing a lot of doublespeak from this representative from Figure Eight Island. All they have to do is look what's happening at Topsail Beach, what has happened at the north end of Rocksville Beach, Shell Island. when they installed that, what do you call it, sheet metal pile thing, it'd go right up to it, and you got 18-foot drop. Or look what's happened at Holden Beach. One thing they are neglecting to say, a lot of our inland islands are experiencing what is called island rollover, whereas the beach sand from the front is deposited in the back of the marsh, and that's how the island maintains itself. I've watched several inlets, Holden Beach, Russell Beach, the North End of Topsail. They're all experiencing island rollover, and any, quote, man-made solution is not a solution at all. So I'm going to hand it back to you, and we'll see what they say.
All right. Thanks so much for your call, David. David Kellum?
Well, North End of North Topsail has experienced issues for a long time. They have homes falling in. Rollover, and I agree with you, caller, that rollover would occur. However, in a developed town such as Wrightsville Beach, Carolina Beach, Figure Eight Island, or Topsail, you're not to have rollover. There's houses there that are going to prevent that rollover and that infrastructure. Again, we're talking developed coastlines that exist today. So I don't think we'll see that aspect of it. North Topsail has looked at the option of a terminal groin and probably will continue to look at that option. That what sand they put there goes away. They now have literally thousands of feet of a sandbag seawall. There is nothing environmentally friendly about a sandbag seawall. People can't walk in front of it. Turtles can't go there and nest. There is no area, there is no beach there for them. And that's what we're trying to avoid. We had a 2,200-foot sandbag seawall along the front coastline of Figure Eight. And a terminal groin will permanently eliminate that as being an impact to the public and to wildlife.
We have an email from Lindsay. Lindsay is actually with Audubon, who is one of the clients of Southern Environmental Law Center, opposed to this project, just to be clear about where she's coming from. She writes, "It's a well-known fact that terminal groins disrupt and block the downdrift transport of sand, causing beaches downdrift to narrow, including at Fort Macon and Pea Island in North Carolina." Those are the two other terminal groins that we've talked about today. "Sand transport in this part of the coast is north to south. This would endanger other houses on Figure Eight Island and possibly even structures on Wrightsville Beach, as well as create a need for more nourishment events. Why hasn't this well-known impact of terminal groins addressed in the draft or supplemental EIS, Environmental Impact Statement? And would the HOA pay for such damages?" And David Kellum, this is actually a point that was raised when I spoke with coastal scientist Rob Young. He also explained potential downdrift impacts, saying in the future, other homeowners on Figure Eight might wind up suffering from erosion because of this being starved downdrift. So what do you say to that point?
Well, that's why even in the legislation that was passed to allow for the four terminal groins, it explicitly states that it must be in conjunction with beech tree nourishment. And so we are fully anticipating to do beech tree nourishment downdrift. Now, we do not believe that the terminal groin will, in fact, cause downdrift erosion, but the only place that it's going to stop sand is from going in the inlet. And if you look at the Argonne Inlet terminal groin that's been monitored and by Dr. Marjorie Overton with NC State University, and her work was funded by the North Carolina Department of Transportation and the National Park Service. 25 years of her monitoring has not indicated that there would be downdrift erosion as a result of the terminal groin. If you go to the Fort Macon terminal groin, you've got professional reports compiled by Rudy Rudolph, Spencer Rogers, and Rob Walker that say the same thing about the Fort Macon terminal groin. So downdrift is not the issue that people make it out to be.
Jeff Gisler.
Well, I think if you look at those two examples, I mean, the one thing that we're talking about is 7 million cubic yards of sand being used to put sand on the beach at Pea Island, and what the Division of Coastal Management described as constant renourishment at Fort Macon. So I think the history of terminal groins is that when you trap more sand in one spot, you're going to lose sand somewhere else because that sand would naturally go elsewhere. So there's only so much sand in the system. And so when you stop more of it in one place, you're going to lose it somewhere else. These are complex systems, and we can't predict exactly where that will be. But when you have a finite resource, it's going to be taken from somewhere.
So let's talk about where we are now in the regulatory process. As I mentioned earlier, we have the Supplemental Environmental Impact Statement, which is it's a version that's been worked on since the draft EIS. And now David Kellum, the final environmental impact statement still has to be produced. How different will that wind up being once it's published from the current SEIS that we have?
I suspect it will be very similar. The Corps of Engineers, again, administers this, and we won't see it until the Corps of Engineers finishes their final product. And they're working with the engineering firm to ensure that everything is being met. Again, it's a comprehensive environmental impact study, taking everything into account. There's also a biological assessment that's occurring at this time. There's also essential fish habitat discussions that are taking place at this time. And all of that is taking into consideration and will weigh into the Corps of Engineers' ultimate decision. When they formulate a record of decision, they will be the determining factor on whether a permit can be issued or not.
And Jeff Gisler, it's your contention that the current draft, the SEIS, is based on a number of unsupported assumptions that you say don't meet the legal requirement. What are some of the points that you think need to change for the final EIS to be complete?
There are several. So one of the things they did in the supplemental EIS is they added some modeling that was based on the 2012 shoreline with a much expanded beach, which provides significantly more habitat. They did the modeling, and then they said, well, but we're going to ignore that because 2006 is worse. And what's important to understand, and so they used the 2006 modeling for their environmental assessment for everything. And when you think of a model, it's supposed to simulate what happens in reality. And the engineering firm that prepared the model said, and so this refers to Alternative 2. Alternative 2 is if the Homeowners Association did nothing. And that's what happened between 2006 and 2012. And this is what the engineering folks said. They said, it is important to note that Alternative 2 does not approximate what occurred between 2006 and 2012. So when you have the folks who prepared the model saying it doesn't actually predict, it doesn't actually show what happens in the real world, and you base your entire decision on that, that's a problem. And I can point to another example in the EIS that shows just how absurd the document is. What they say is, under current conditions, immediate efforts to abandon or relocate structures from the ocean shoreline will not be necessary. That's what the Corps is saying.
And you're talking about retreat here, people abandoning their homes or them back.
And what they're saying is, because the beach is so big now, there's no need to do that. Two paragraphs later, they say, with regard to the relocation option, 23 oceanfront homes located on Surf Court, Comber Road, and Inlet Hook Road fall into this category and would have to eventually be demolished or moved within the next 5 years. So they're saying both that there's no threat and 23 homes are going to be lost in the next 5 years. So that's just, there's no way that those can both be true.
David Kellum, final thought.
We're doing the best we can to create a long-term management plan that takes everything into consideration. Figure Eight is doing the right things. We are the right stewards for the environment, and we plan to continue to provide public access up there and the people to enjoy it.
That's this edition of Coastline. Thanks so much to our guests, David Kellum and Jeff Gisler. Join us next Wednesday when we take a closer look at the community conversations between law enforcement and the communities they police. Coastline's executive producer is Cleve Callison. Producer is Isabel Shepherd. Technical director is Ken Campbell. If you missed part of today's show, look for it on our website at whqr.org or subscribe to the podcast from the iTunes store. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.